You have now arrived at Stadium and Gale.
Boys and girls, ladies and gents, welcome to another episode of Stadium and Gale. It's your favorite Uncle Silk.
It's Dan.
And Della Torre.
Same corner, same time. What it do, gentlemen?
How's everybody's weekend? Nick, we know how your weekend was.
Well, I bought a car.
What'd you buy?
I got a new Tesla Model Y. Just dropped it off to get the windows tinted. Got my parents up in town. So a little bit different weekend when Florida's away. I would have loved to have driven to Baton Rouge, but had spring football on Saturday. Football pays for that car and the mortgage. So stayed in town for that.
You got to leave the tent off it, man. Provide some inspiration for the people in the streets, you know?
No. I did see Trevor Etienne got thrown a tent ticket this weekend, among other things. Thought about that this morning when I was asking for what shade I wanted. Hopefully no tent ticket. If you're an officer here in Gainesville listening to this show, it's definitely the legal 30%. Don't mind me.
You got to provide some inspiration, man. We'll get into the ETN stuff a little bit later. Yeah. I had a solid weekend. Just a whole lot of work. I was down in Miami. Weather was on and off. You know how Florida is. It'll be storming 1 minute and then sunshine the next. They had Ultra Fest down there, so it was overcrowded per usual. Mm-hmm. But work, did a little browsing around Wynwood, then got up out of there. So that was my vibe for the weekend. Kids on spring break. Went to an art show yesterday, which was pretty cool. Art Palm Beach annual event down here at the convention center. Got some inspiration down there at that. But that was the vibes of my weekend. A little art, a little work. Spring break with the kids, hit the beach, vibed out a little bit.
You said it was Culture Festival?
Oh, no, it was Art Palm Beach, which is like...
No, the one that you went to in Miami.
Ultra Fest.
Ultra. Sorry. Yeah. Ultra Fest is a huge EDM concert event. It corresponds with Miami Music Week. I saw that they got rained out on Saturday night. A flooding occurred. Nick and I were talking about a pre-show. We try to keep this as family rated as possible, so we won't talk about too much of what we said, but I would try to imagine evacuating 200,000 people that were at that event was not probably an easy endeavor for the city of Miami.
Tough to get Molly out of a rained out event down in Miami.
Just rolling 200,000 people down the street.
Yeah, I don't know how you roll that many people out at a time. Good goodness.
If you don't know what you're talking about, that's good. We won't expound anymore for our young listeners. If you're watching us on YouTube, please hit the like button, hit the subscribe button if you haven't. Drop us a chat, super chat, obviously. We'll get to your question as soon as possible. I hit the golf course Saturday. I got rained on for about 10 minutes, but other than that, great day of golf out there. Got to watch the Gators game Friday. Tough loss. We'll talk about that a little bit, but otherwise a pretty chill and relaxing weekend over here. But on the golf course, I did get to tell some friends of mine about Lucy, and they were very intrigued. They're heavy users of the nicotine product, so got to tell them a little bit more about Lucy. So Lucy, if you guys have listened to the show, you've heard a lot about them. Lucy is a direct-to-your-door nicotine product, anywhere from 2 milligrams all the way up to 12. They have the traditional nicotine packets that you may have heard of. They have the ones with the little breaker ball there in the middle, and then they have gum. If you are looking for gum, Nick, what flavors? I see that you're doing a little modeling show. What flavors you got there?
I got some new flavors for me. Well, not this one. The espresso, beautiful in the morning. A little cappuccino in the morning. A coffee in the morning. Throw the espresso in. And then the other one I'm excited about. I can't find it. This is apple cider.
Apple cider. Okay.
With the breakers. So just got a new shipment in. They did not send it. Spent our own money.
Yeah,
on breakers. So that's how much we enjoy the product.
That's how you know you believe in the product, if you buy it yourself, man.
That's right.
Did use our code though to save myself some money.
Nick, what is that code?
Code stadium. Lucy.com backslash stadium will apply the discount for you right away. Found that out.
Travis in the comment asking for the milligrams. He's want to make sure you get his right dosage.
These are 8 milligrams. Wow. They go all the way up to 12.
They do go all the way up to 12. 2, 4, 6, 8, 10, 12. Nick shot out a couple flavors there. They do have the traditional mint and wintergreen as well. Mango, if you're going for that. So, again, promo code stadium at checkout. That's lucy.com/stadium at checkout. You'll get 15% off of your order as well if you do the monthly subscription. No commitment. You can cancel anytime. Would never tell you that you couldn't cancel right after you made that order. But if that's a world that you want to live on, certainly that world exists out there as well. So lucy.com or lucy.co/stadium, 20% off your first order, free shipping, 30-day refund. Fine print. Lucy products are only for adults of legal age, and every order is age verified. Warning, this product does contain nicotine, and nicotine is an addictive chemical.
Nicotine's fantastic. Shout out to the lip lattes. I'm going to steal that from you, Trev.
Lip latte. That's hilarious. Lip
lattes. You've heard upper deckies and lower deckies.
Back when I was playing baseball, when we were like dipping like regular tobacco, throwing it in the top shelf was degenerate behavior.
Yeah. Now, I think they call that Bar Africa is a hockey term.
Whoa.
Okay,
it's just a phrase, nothing related to anything other than just what it's called.
All right, the hockey guys.
Dan loves freezer tarps. Too, huh? Freezer tarps is a Tampa boy. I saw him out and about a couple weeks ago, actually. Not friendly, didn't go say hello. But let's see here. Ultra has been commercial trash for a decade now. We were talking about that a little bit before. I think Instagram wanting to be there, showing everybody that you're there. I think the VIP tickets were $2,000. Mm-hmm. I couldn't imagine what like a table setup would be. Probably six figures minimum per night.
Light work. Tesla.
Yeah, just like a rounding error.
For really big table.
Tesla Nick over there.
Yeah, everything in Miami is watered down. Art Basel, Ultra Fest, it's all commercialized. It's just not what it used to be. I do like the Lucy vibes for you boys, man, because...
Come on, man. You haven't thrown yours in yet?
I'm trying. I'm earthy as hell. I'll be walking around with no shoes on and shit, bro. Lucy. I'm going to give them a try one day. I got them on deck, though. I'm not going to give them away. But I prefer that over the dip. I worked with a guy one time. We was in a work truck together. He used to share the work truck, and he used to always have this dipping bottle. One day, he spilled that joint over, and it stunk to the high heavens, man. I'm a fair one, for sure. Mm. So shout out to the Lucy's.
Yep. No direct cause between anything negative to the body and nicotine. You know, we'll see what might happen, but no carcinogens, no tar, no tobacco. Good product overall. Supposed to help with... brain focus.
Okay.
Supposed to, but again, it doesn't come from the earth.
Yeah,
not something you're trip over when you're grounding.
Yeah, it might throw off my numbers, man.
All right, we've got a question here. It might be worth just chatting about briefly. Keon Young, 4-star safety. Announced his commitment to Florida on Saturday through Hayes Fawcett by putting an edit out. It later came out that he was not yet a take for the University of Florida. Is this more On3 sabotage? So Nick, as a spokesperson for On3 and recruiting, as a recruit, Nick, yourself, is this On3 sabotage or is this just a miscommunication?
The kid believed that he had a committable offer, believed that he was a take. I think that had been, I'm not a recruiting writer, so I don't really talk with, the coaches about recruiting, but there's a reason why the recruiting writers were putting in crystal balls, RPMs for this kid. It's because they were told that he was a take. And then the kid goes... commits and all of a sudden he's not a take anymore. And it's a disaster and it's embarrassing for the kid. It's a bad look for Florida. Bad look for Florida, and embarrassing for a 17-year-old kid. So, miscommunication on Florida's end. But you know, I get it. It's on three. It's us.
I'm not trying to be dark side Dan here, but we've talked for the last 2.5 years, right, under this regime, or a little bit more than 2 years, that PR is just a nightmare. Consistently, right? A lot of missteps. Anytime something good happens, something bad, you know, seems to follow, or it just doesn't seem like we ever have our ducks in a row. And I would think if I had a recruiting staff of about 50, at least one person to share that information with him, if somebody was that close to committing and felt like they had a committable offer. The obviously Keon is a top 25 safety in the country, comes from Lakeland. You'd think that those communication lines would be open. I know things happen, mistakes happen, tough conversations don't always happen, but just a tough look for the University of Florida. Again,
tough look at a pipeline. Like, communication just got to be on point. These are professionals. Everybody should be on the same page. And I'm not going to, the writer's going to get their hand, get tipped the insider information on what may happen with a recruit. And you see the crystal balls roll in. That's not just by chance. And I don't think these writers are going to take the kids' word for it. They're going to communicate with the staff. So I don't understand what the miscommunication could be at this point, bro. The staff has been on campus a while. They recruited before they got to the University of Florida. The continuing of mishaps like this is just, like you said, Dan, we can't, even if we have good news, it's always, you know, bad news spinning the block. Like any second now, we can't have a good time, but, just an embarrassing look again at a school that's a pipeline to the University of Florida at Lakeland. So it's got to get it together, man. Too many people to be unorganized.
And then the other thing in defense of Hayes, because I see and it's not just Florida fans, it's every fan of every fan base. When Hayes says he picks X school over A, B, and C, that's just what the kid's telling him. Like, Hayes isn't talking to, as far as I know, talking to all the coaches at the 9 schools he's listed, you know, as this kid committing picking over. It's just Hayes working directly with the kids he's making edits for. So when
Hayes is having some fun with this as well. He trolls with some of those over Floridas in the past, for sure. It's all good. I get it.
He's a young kid. Nice kid.
Yeah, and I would troll crazy fans as well if I was in that position, bro. Mm-hmm. So, like, if you guys reacting to everything and I can get some more engagement, it's an engagement form and error. Do sometime the kid maybe, you know, giving them that, but he's definitely playing the game a little bit. And I like it.
Don't troll yourself.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's not a troll if you don't engage.
Yeah. Let's see. There was a couple of Deshaun said he has an offer, but I think UF thinks they have another kid who's better that they are leading with, and they're trying to take a better safety. Certainly could be the case. You try to get ahead of that beforehand. It's just a PR thing, right? Like, it doesn't mean that Florida won't potentially get a safety that they are more comfortable with or that they want more. You just don't want to get them to a point where they're committing and then have to recant that and then delete tweets and all this other stuff. It just doesn't look great. I know Florida also thought that they were going to get Mandarin High School safety Hilton Stubbs, and it is March. It's March 25th now, so recruiting won't be done until December. Okay. And there's a lot of things that happen between the week before National Signing Day in December and actual National Signing Day. But I know the Gators thought they sat in a really good position with him. Hilton Stubbs is a 4-star, ranked as the number 6 safety in the country, according to the On3 industry rankings. He had a 92.5% on the recruiting prediction machine, but USC had themselves a weekend recruiting. So Gators are going to have to circle the block on him and hopefully be able to get him. But just a tough look overall. That's kind of where we're going.
USC thing, right? USC might have gotten their tax return. They went.
Oh, they definitely got their tax return. they definitely did not put 10 on the Tesla. They want everybody to see that they flexing a little bit and they got a bag. I don't know. I don't, like, what's the commitment these days? You want to get them because 9 times out of 10, they stick. But it's such a business play these days. Stubbs going all the way out to the West Coast. I feel good about that. Keep recruiting him. Yeah. The chance of flipping him is going to be very high. It's not like he went to Georgia, Alabama, somebody in the Southeast. So I'm not mad at that, but to tell this kid no after he committed and the publicity that comes with like telling him to decommit after that, or I don't know what the board looks like, but just doesn't seem like a smart move.
Yeah, I don't know. I haven't done enough of my recruiting analysis for the class of 2025. I know Keon Young is a very good player. I think just looking back on the optics of where recruiting is now, where Florida's program is right now, they just seem to be, I don't know, stumbling along here. And that's just concerning, right? That more than anything, it's just like another thing, right? Is it the world's biggest thing? No. Does it impact the player? Does it look bad? Yeah. But like, it just overall in a vacuum, like it's just a constant PR, just disaster for the last 2 years.
Fun.
Yeah, all right.
I got to see the safety board. That's all.
Got to see the safety board. Got to see the safety board. All right. Let's see here. Nick, let's talk a little bit. So we do have Jacob Rudner joining us here in about 20-ish minutes. So we'll talk a little bit more about basketball with him, talk a little football with him. But Nick, give us some baseball updates and we'll get into football. We'll carry that right into to Rudner.
Yeah, the weekend Gators lose to JU on Tuesday, then go down for a 2023 College World Series final rematch against LSU. Second consecutive weekend, you're playing a top five team. Florida comes out, strikes out 16 times on Friday night, popped up five times. So that's 21 of 27 outs. We're pretty not non-competitive. Comeback. Saturday, win in extra innings. Almost said overtime. I'm watching too much March Madness. Win in extra innings on Saturday. Jack Caglione shows up on Sunday, throws seven innings of three-hit baseball. Florida run rules LSU. So interesting that Florida on the season is 14-9, but only 2-5 on midweek games. They are 12-4 with wins at Miami, at LSU, and over a top five ranked Texas A&M on the weekend. So a bit of an enigma right now, but the teams with the little numbers next to their name continue rolling in. They play Florida State, who, let me see, Florida State is
you gotta ranked. You got to catch these hands this time, man.
Yeah.
Florida State ranked 12th. By D1 Baseball. So we'll play number 12 Florida State in Jacksonville on Tuesday.
They lost a couple this weekend, though.
Florida State got swept this weekend at Clemson.
I saw that they lost two. I didn't obviously care about the third.
They
but.
Played a doubleheader on Saturday. They were leading 8-1 in the ninth inning at Clemson. Ended up losing that game. Tough to do.
Tough look for Kirk Herbstreit.
Also gave up, I think, 14-15 runs.
Kirk Herbstreit started talking shit about FSU baseball, and all of a sudden they gave up like they did last time.
Yeah.
So Clemson came back in the ninth, I think, second game Saturday and Sunday. Or no, second Friday, Saturday came back in the ninth inning, walk-off wins. Sunday, it was just an onslaught. They were down, I think, at one point, like 11-2, maybe, and nice. Just poured it on.
Good.
So FSU showed up 19-0. They're now 19-3. And then Florida will host Mississippi State. Mississippi State lost 2 of 3 at Texas A&M last week. So another opportunity for Florida. It will be interesting to see who throws on Tuesday. I put some stuff out just now on Pierce Kapala that he'll be getting, or he is getting closer to coming back for Florida, who throws on Tuesday against FSU in Jacksonville. That'll be interesting to see. And then
Gators had 6 home runs yesterday. Did I read that right?
Yeah.
6 homers, baby.
6 Jeez. Homers. And they had back to back to back home runs. First yes, time in 19 years. Interesting little connection there. Brian Giroliman, who is the younger brother of Chuck Giroliman, the Gators hitting and infield coach, was one of those three players 19 years ago who was part of the back-to-back-to-back homers. So
that's cool.
This team can hit. The team can hit. They do enjoy striking out, but they can hit. That's for sure.
Let's
Cags,
see.
Cags was talking greasy as hell on that hill, man. I love it. Yeah, LSU.
No love lost between Florida and LSU.
Yeah. I like how greasy it got, man. But Cags is that guy, one of the best two-way players in the country, if not the best players. Are you worried about him pitching too much early on? Or?
No. This is what he does. He's young, he's big. This is what he wants to do. I think eventually an MLB team will make him pick. I don't think he will do both forever. But he's going to pitch and hit as long as he wants to, or as long as he wants to at Florida, which he does. So he's pitching great. I think the biggest thing for him is, just between the ears. Last year, a walk would turn into two walks or a hit would turn into two walks and three, four runs in an inning. Baseball's a game when you're hitting, if you fail 70% of the time, you're doing really good. Pitching a little bit different in terms of those failure numbers. But you have to be able to move on. It's a game of failure. You can't let one mistake, one bad pitch affect the rest of your outing. He's doing that so well now. Had a couple walks yesterday. Didn't really have great feel for his fastball, so he leaned on his other stuff, where last year he might have been like, I can't throw my fastball. Like, this is bad. And it leads to, a short inning or a short outing with a bunch of runs. So
yeah, he really seems to be in more control. He seems to be in more control this year. Got himself out of a couple jams.
Yep.
This past weekend, last year it just seemed like towards the end, like you said, walking guys. Got a little erratic with hitting some batters, but he's doing his thing right now. Fun baseball to watch.
It's interesting. So Sunday, Trav asked about it. They were players. He's getting a little chirpy, a little chippy. Florida, I think, I can't remember what happened up. But it got to a point where Cags said something. There was a home run. LSU hit a home run. Jones hits a home run. Ball was smoked, and he enjoyed his work, as one should. If you hit a ball 420 feet, take a step back, enjoy what you did, then keep it moving. I'm an old school baseball guy. If I'm pitching and I think you looked at that ball too long, the next batter is going to get it in the ribs, and your teammate will tell you, hey, man, quit looking at that ball so long because that hurt.
Don't seem like a smart move right there.
So Jones, as he's rounding first base, says something to Cags. And Luke Heyman, who is playing first, says something to Jack. Florida starts pouring it on. And Jack got as I just told you, I'm fine hitting guys. You send a message, you throw it below the shoulders and above the knees. There's a lot of area there to send your message. LSU's pitcher threw it essentially at Jack's head, gets out of the way. Jack looks, I think two or three pitches later, Jack hits one out of the park, turns and says something. So, to me,
talk greasy to him, Cags.
When I watch the home run back,
it's a big boy, man.
The pitcher kind of turns and looks towards Mac or Mac turns and looks towards Jack with this smirk. And to me, it was kind of like, okay, I sent a message and you sent one back, message received. I don't like throwing up and in like that. If you wanted to send a message, throw the ball, hit him in the ribs, hit him in the butt, hit him in the legs. Like I said, between the knees and shoulders, that's your area to hit. Guys throw too hard to be throwing at heads right now.
I'm a little new school. If I'm a coach and you just pitch to a batter and he smacked your ball out of the park, and then you come back and hit the next batter because the last batter was looking at you a little crazy, like, I might want to pull you. Like, bro, we trying to win the game or what? Like, pitch better. If he smacks the ball out of the park, pitch better. Don't pitch put better. The next guy on the bag, bro.
There's times to do it. So, like, you'll see a lot of times, like, if something happens in, like, the playoffs, pitchers will have long memories. And when we get to spring training next year, the first pitch you see from me might hit you in the ribs.
Right.
And that's letting you know, like, hey, I can't do it in game seven of the NLDS. This guy, I can't do it in game seven, you know, of the NLCS. Your Monday morning cheat check.
It's your Monday baseball cheat check.
I can't do it in game seven of the NLCS, but like at that point, LSU was down like 8 runs. Like, hey, buddy, this game's cashed. I didn't like how he looked at it. I'm gonna send a message. Now, listen, some people don't like this new school. They don't like sending message. I like that baseball kind of polices itself. And as long as you're doing that safely, like getting hit sucks. Getting hit with a 98 mile an hour fastball sucks. And I'm going to get that message. I might look at the next home run for half as much time while I'm, you know, icing my ribs. You just got to do it safely. I didn't like that, how high they went up and in on Jack. And it's not a Florida thing. I'd say the same thing if Jack had done that, you know, to Tommy White or to somebody in LSU. There's a place you go to hit people. There's a place you throw to send a message, and at someone's face is not that place.
Is our pitching getting better, or LSU?
Yeah. No, LSU can swing it. The biggest thing for me is the lines won't show it, but I thought that Kate Fisher, he had one really bad inning, gave up a couple of runs, but a two-run bad inning for him is better than what we had been getting, which would be a 4, 5, 6-run inning would be his typical bad inning. Liam Pearson gave up 4 earned runs. 3 of those were just fastballs left over the plate, 3 bad pitches. LSU turned it into 4 runs. Other than that, he was really good. I thought that was encouraging to see him pitch better. The line doesn't look it, but he pitched better. Luke McNeely, Alex Philpott, Grayson Smith, Frank Menendez, 4 freshmen who Florida needs to pitch well this year, who had been pitching terribly up until this point. Midweeks, weekends had been struggling. Really look like they're starting to turn a corner. Started with Luke McNeely 2 Sundays ago when he closed out the last game against Texas A&M. He's carried that in. Pitched really well against JU. Pitched really well at LSU as well. And that's – hats off to LSU. 12,893 people at a college baseball game on Saturday night. Sunday, they had their women's basketball team on campus playing in the NCAA tournament, and they've kind of embraced Kim Mulkey and whatever she's got going on with that Washington Times Post reporter.
Washington Post, yeah.
They've embraced her, the defending national champion women's basketball team, competing for attention. Tip-off was the same time as first pitch. They had 11,400 there on Sunday afternoon. So LSU, I understand no one's going to like to hear this. They are a great baseball fan base. They love baseball. They love their LSU Tiger baseball, and they show up everywhere. So for a freshman to come out on the mound Saturday and pitch in front of nearly 13,000 people, guarantee that's the most people he's ever seen in a stadium when he's been on the mound. So really encouraging to see those freshman pitchers start to round out. And Jack Caglione's just been absolutely ridiculous on the mound. I think Florida has won all five games that he's started. And I'm pulling up his numbers real quick. On the year, he's hitting .395 with 11 home runs, 24 RBIs, and an OPS, which is your on-base percentage plus slugging, of 1.211. As Scott Carter noted, Babe Ruth owns the all-time career record in OPS at 1.164. So Cags not far off of Babe Ruth.
Nice.
And then on the mound, he is 3-0 with a 1.65 ERA and 27 and a third innings. Has only allowed 12 hits. Has walked 18 and struck out 39. Getting it done.
Man. You're hoping. So,
I mean, especially with everything going on with Shohei Ohtani's betting ring. I mean, Jack Caglione could be the talk of Major League Baseball here pretty soon.
I saw a picture. It's just art. And we can ask Jacob about this. Jacob's a big L.A. Dodger fan from out in L.A. Shohei Ohtani standing next to Mookie Betts, and the picture is just Ohtani Betts, just art.
That's great. That's fantastic. Masterpiece. That's fantastic. $4.5 million bet, interpreter fired. Waiting to see what happens there. You mentioned Kim Mulkey. I think she is definitely living up to that quote. What was it, Batman? It's like you either live long enough, or you either die a hero, or you live long enough to become a villain. So whatever's about to be released from the Washington Post is going to be earth-shattering for
her. Can't imagine. Yeah, I can't imagine what the, because I don't know that anything is even like leaked out or been rumored about like what the story could be. But Kim Mulkey,
she knows.
I'm saying we don't know, but my spidey senses are tingling. If she's going this hard and this public against a reporter, there's going to be some stuff in whatever this reporter is going to put out. And I don't know what it is, but listen, they won't care.
Oh, no, they don't. No, they won't care. But I'm going to get my giggles off.
Yes. Yeah. They don't care. And to an extent.
I like to see bad things happen to LSU.
Yeah, to an extent. Like, listen, I don't think as sports fans, I don't think any of us care that our coaches or players are not choir boys when they're bringing home championships.
Yeah. Oh, no. I mean, yeah. All right, let's get on to the show here. We have Jacob Redner, who's going to join us here in a second. Let's do a quick ad read. Let's give a quick shout out to our friends at Home Field Apparel. HomeFieldApparel.com, promo code Stadium and Gale at checkout will give you 15% off of your order. Anything that you could ever want from the University of Florida, vintage logos. I think they have about 24 or so. They've got a cool starter looking jacket. They've got a couple polos, short sleeve, some of those three-quarter sleeve baseball style shirts for the University of Florida. They have about 100 different schools. They're running a bunch of different things for March Madness as well. So go check out homefieldapparel.com, promo code Stadium and Gale. And with that, we welcome on, I think for the first time, but definitely not a guy that we haven't talked about a bunch on the show. One of the hardest working guys covering the Gator beat from 247 Sports is our friend Jacob Redner. Jacob, how are you, my friend?
I'm good. I appreciate you guys having me on. This is the first time that I've been on Stadium and Gale, so I appreciate it.
You just missed it before. Go ahead. Well, before we get into Florida Gator talk, we were just talking about your Dodgers and the absolute art piece. Picture that I saw from batting practice with Mookie and Shohei standing next to each other. Of course, they don't put first names on the back of jerseys.
You know, Ohtani Betts. It's a it's perfect.
We all feel bad for your mid-market, small-market Los Angeles Dodgers and hope that they can somehow figure out how to win some games this year with that tiny budget.
Yeah, I have some confidence that they'll be able to make it happen with that payroll.
Yeah, for sure. All right, Jacob, let's get into Florida Gators. Let's talk a little basketball. We haven't gotten to basketball yet on this show. Gators lose a heartbreaker to Colorado in a game that the referee, the head referee, did not get asked to referee on Sunday, surprisingly. But the Gators did lose in a game that featured very little defense. It looked like Todd Grantham's defense out there. Jacob, what talk us through what was otherwise a very happy season for Florida Gators basketball ends in a little bit of disappointment. But give us kind of the breakdown of that game and just the basketball program at large.
Yeah, well, look, I think it's worth mentioning, at least to start, that that was going to be a really hard game for Florida to win. And I think that that was the case before some questionable refereeing, especially towards the end of the contest. Once Florida lost Micah Hamlockton, this was going to be a real challenge. Colorado is a very effective scoring team, especially inside. They do a really good job with their defensive rebounding. Losing your starting center, who had the second best offensive rebounding season in Florida history, was going to make that really difficult to win. And so there was a reason that Colorado entered play as the favorite. Things played out that way. I believe Colorado finishes a 1.5-point favorite on the betting, and they won by 2. So things generally played out how I thought they would in that game. I think Florida could have been a lot better with its interior defense. They allowed a lot of dribble penetration to the hoop. Colorado got away with a lot of scoring around the rim. And then, of course, you know, the officiating didn't help with that. Eric Curry didn't get advanced to Sunday, like you said. He called Todd Golden's for a technical. That was the second time that he's called Todd Golden for a technical, and he has three in his career. And so that obviously compounded Florida's issues. And it was kind of just one of those games, you know. Florida wasn't able to get a stop. The referees seemingly were kind of playing against Florida as well. And the result was the result.
Yeah, and I'm not
how much real quick. Yeah. How much you were in Nashville? How much, obviously, from just an on court standpoint and his production as is one thing, but how does just the injury and the extent and how gruesome the injury was, how does that just affect the team? And what did you see just mentally coming back from that? I mean, in the SEC tournament championship game, when the injury happens, I'm thinking, well, the team's cooked. Like, it's hard to reset mentally and focus on a game. And then even to try to then carry that into the NCAA tournament where it's, you know, one and done.
Yeah, well, that was absolutely the case. And I think that you kind of hit the nail on the head there. It seemingly kind of sucked the wind out of the sails for Florida immediately when it happened. You know, I was sitting courtside when Hanlogton got hurt, and you could tell that once Florida's players realized what had happened, and it kind of took a second for everybody to realize just the extent to which he was injured in that game, nothing was really the same. Florida's energy was gone. We saw, especially in that championship game against Auburn, things started to get sloppy really quickly after Hanlogton got hurt. It's because I think everybody's mind was somewhere else. They were wondering how Hanlogton was doing. I think everybody was truthfully a little bit traumatized with just how violent it was when it happened. And then nothing was quite the same. You know, Florida's energy was still kind of sapped a little bit when we spoke to the team on Tuesday in Gainesville after they had gotten back from Nashville. And I think that it took some time for them to even rebound to like a, we can get back out on the court confidently level. And I don't know that they even returned fully to the confidence that they had played with all season by the time they got to their tournament game. I mean, think about the situation. Florida didn't know who it was going to play in March Madness until Wednesday when Colorado beat Boise State. So we're talking about a team that had to prepare late for its opponent. It didn't know who exactly it was going to play. We're talking about a team that had to prepare a rotation and utilize guys in manners that they hadn't all year long. So they had to reconfigure roles. They didn't know who they were playing. And they had just seen their teammate go through what I thought was one of the worst injuries in college sports since maybe 2013, when we saw something somewhat similar with Kevin Ware. So it was a really hard week for Florida. I thought the timing was bad. And to your point, you know, mentally, it took a toll that I don't think that they had enough time to recover from.
What did happen? I know Todd Golden was aghast, if you will, before he got his technical. I think I saw Graham Hall or somebody was tweeting about a broken whistle that nobody could hear. What did actually happen sideline? Because we just saw Todd Golden pissed, and then we saw the T.
Yeah, there was a late foul call, and Eric Curry claimed that he blew his whistle, but the whistle didn't work. And then he signaled over to the scorer's table late that there was a foul that he intended to call. And Todd Golden just hated it. He did not think that that was fair. Obviously, nobody heard the whistle. And he basically tried to say, you're calling this way after the fact. You know, what's the deal? And so Eric Curry, to my understanding, told him to get back into the coach's area. He was outside of that zone. Golden told him, I'm back in the area. Eric Curry teed him up at that point. So there was kind of no leash given. It sounds like there's a little bit of a history between Curry and Golden. And for the third time in Golden's career, he was assessed a technical. And two of those three, again, have been from Eric Curry.
The season ended. I'm sorry.
Go ahead.
The season ended with the injury, one and done in the tournament. But overall, how would you sum up the season?
You know, I think that this was a huge season for Florida. I think it was a building block campaign for them. Do I think that it ended the way anybody imagined or wanted? No. And like you said, that goes back to when Hanlogton was hurt. And obviously the first round exit didn't help with that either. But this is a team that grew from 16 and 17 in its first season under Todd Golden, where they had a litany of issues, be them rebounding or three-point shooting. Both of those things were a major problem in year one. To a team that had 21 regular season wins in year two, was one of the highest scoring teams in the nation. I think they were sixth at the time of their loss to Colorado in points per game. They're one of the most efficient offenses in the country. So this was kind of a proof of concept year. We saw Florida go from questionable in its first season under Todd Golden to this is what these guys can be And, you know, maybe what can it look like going forward? I think Florida still needs to learn how to play better defense under Golden. I think that that's going to be a priority in the portal for them this offseason. But the key is that they set the foundation for their program. They're going to return the majority of their roster from this past season, this very successful group. And now they're going to be able to build upon it, go back into the portal and go get guys who are starting caliber or high rotation caliber players and elevate from a team that is now a 21-win team, 24 if you look at the whole picture, and see what they can do to grow it. I really do think that Florida positioned itself, and it doesn't mean that it's going to, you know, come to fruition, but at a minimum, Florida positioned itself to be much more successful next year and to potentially even compete for the top of the conference. This was, you know, an 11-win team in SEC play, and in most years, that's a top four finish. So Florida's headed in the right direction. I think they emphatically proved that this year. And even though that it didn't end the way that I think people wanted, the proof of concept was there nonetheless.
Yeah, we talked a little bit about it last week. It's just frustrating that the Gators made it all the way to the SEC championship. They lose Micah during that time. They still end up a 7 seed. It's like you never want them to lose, and you always want to give them the chance to compete. But it's almost like, man, if we just wouldn't have come back against Texas A&M, you know, is Florida still dancing? Because they would have probably still been a 7 seed. So frustrating in hindsight to think about. But
I think Todd had even said that. You can correct me because I went to zero Todd Golden press conferences. But I think Florida was playing their best basketball late. And you don't want to play your best basketball in October, November. There's no sense in being the best version of yourself in the first month of the season. So I think that's kind of the frustrating part too, is you kind of were peaking at the right time and then just a really unfortunate set of circumstances that just kind of went after another. And then the season ends abruptly.
Well, you know, I was going to say that I think this season is as promising as it was. And as much as Florida was able to kind of push itself in the right direction under Todd Golden, it will also kind of be defined by its misfortune to some degree. Even we can go back before the season even started. Florida had a commitment from Yale transfer forward EJ Jarvis. They were looking at him as somebody who was going to be a factor in its rotation. And for personal reasons, he steps away from basketball. So they start the year down a scholarship player who they were never going to get back. So minus one for Florida right out the gate. And then you have Zion Pullen misses the first 3 games of the season because the NCAA suspends him for participating.
NCAA things, yeah.
Exactly. Participating in a tournament that lots of guys are participating in, was exploring his draft prospects, and they said, well, you returned, you're suspended. 3 games. Florida loses to Virginia. I would argue if it had Pullen, probably don't lose that game in neutral site territory. Later on in the year, Florida has Cam Logton suffer an ankle injury early on that they had to play 3 games without him. Later on in the year, obviously, Handlockton has a massive leg injury that is an emotional drain, but also takes a toll on their rotations. And then you get into the tournament, and they're stifled not only by the fact that they don't have their starting center, but the officiating is questionable, so bad that Eric Curry doesn't advance to the second round of the tournament. So this was a season that I think was a lot of progress and also a lot of bad luck for Florida that kind of came to define the year overall.
Yeah, I saw a bunch of bad officiating. I spent all weekend watching either Florida LSU or college basketball. I wonder, and I think that the advancement of gambling laws, I think we will finally get overdue in at least college football and college basketball full-time officials. There's so much money being wagered and gambled on these games where you have Learfield marketing executives making calls in March Madness games. And maybe you need to have full-time referees making calls in March Madness games and not people who spend 9 months, 10 months out of the year in boardrooms.
Well, you and I have talked about this off the camera before, Nick. This is going to become a more prevalent thing. It's easier and easier to gamble. It's easier and easier to be influenced by external factors if you're somebody who makes important decisions on the court, be it a coach or a referee or a player. And that will have to be reformed over time. And to be clear, I'm not saying that anybody was influenced by a bet that they had over the weekend. But I do think that it's something that has to be kept an eye on.
Reporting here first.
Yeah. Yeah. Right.
Who did Shohei Ohtani bet on? You know.
Yeah. There you go. Exactly. but I do think in seriousness that that is something that will have to be monitored at least to some degree, because I think it's going to be hard to avoid that these guys are influenced by these factors that exist outside that are now very accessible and you know, can become a problem.
Absolutely. Speaking of misfortune, you know, I know a lot of the Gator fan faithful was very excited about Riley Kugel coming back this year. Obviously not the year that he probably anticipated, Gator fans anticipated. You didn't see much of him towards the end of the season. Expectation. Well, what kind of happened there? What can you tell us about, like, what happened? And then obviously the expectation is probably not to expect him back in the orange blue next year, is it?
Well, I'll address that part first, just because I think the answer is a lot more simple. You know, I think that it's yet to be decided. If I was a betting man, to keep on the theme here, I would say that it's probably more likely that he explores his options at a minimum. I mean, the reality is that this is a guy who was a preseason all-conference pick, and there were several games, including down the stretch, where he was did not play due to coach's decision. Mm-hmm. And those things typically don't lead to let's run it back and try it again. So, you know, I would be surprised if he didn't explore his options. But at the same time, I don't think that that's been determined 100% as the time of us having this conversation. Mm-hmm. And so we'll have to wait and see. But as far as the year went, you know, I think that it was a combination of factors. At times, you know, you don't need me to tell you guys this. I think we all saw it. The attitude and kind of the body language was not necessarily where it needed to be all the time. And Todd Golden has said very publicly, I value consistent effort, regardless of the minutes that you're playing. It's the reason that we saw Denzel Aberdeen emerge in a very significant role later on in the season, because he was consistent. Denzel Aberdeen is a guy who, if you ask any player or coach on this roster and team, he is a guy who shows out every single time in practice, and he averaged under 10 minutes a game throughout the season. I am not at every practice, so I can't comment on this fully, but you know, I would go as far as to assume that Kugel's effort wasn't as consistent. It probably wasn't what Golden was looking for. And when that happens, it leads to guys vaulting you in the depth chart. And you know, we can point right back to Denzel Aberdeen. That was somebody who got some minutes that I think initially would have went towards Riley Kugel. And it just comes down to the effort you put in and what the coaches are going to be willing to give you back as a result of that.
Shout out to the Denzel Aberdeen legacy game in Nashville.
From a roster perspective, how many guys you think we go out there in the portal?
Well, let's start with had a couple people in the chat asking about Walter Clayton, and then and you just addressed Riley Kugel as well.
Right.
Well, so yeah, I'll answer both questions. As far as Walter Clayton goes, my current expectation is that he's back in the fold. Again, like I said with Clayton, I don't know that that's decided at the time of us having this conversation. It's still very fresh after the season ended. Florida was just eliminated, and I think that there are conversations and research that still need to occur. But if I had to guess right now, I would tell you that Walter Clayton is a Gator again for the 24-25 season. And then as far as the portal goes, it'll depend somewhat on that. So at this time, I would say the safest thing to say is that there's a range. I would say it's 3 to 5. I think that Florida could end up going out to Europe, as we've seen it do for two off seasons under Golden, and go get a freshman player from that part of the world who's going to, you know, take on a roster spot. They have a commitment and a signature from Isaiah Brown, a prospect out of Orlando Christian Prep. He will play a role next year and will take up a roster spot. If Clayton returns, that limits you, I believe, off the top of my head, to 5 or 4 roster openings, and those spots will be filled by the portal. I don't really anticipate Florida making any late freshman additions that aren't of the international variety, and that'll leave spots for about 4 or 5 transfers. I can imagine that they're going to take either 2 or 3 forwards, especially now that they have to account for what could probably be a lengthy recovery for Micah Handlogton. And of course, they'll need to replace Zion Pullen at that point guard position. So there alone, you have 3 or 4 transfers, and it could be as high as 5.
I know that there was a player from Mount St. Mary's that heard from Florida. Tawan in the chat here is asking about the center from Rutgers and Amari Williams, two different players. I don't know if you had heard anything about them or Florida's interest. An odd time for the portal to open up right during the middle of March Madness.
Just wild.
Well, so honestly, the answer to that question is to that point, and it's this. Yeah. Florida actually has not really been aggressively going after players or making, you know, concerted efforts to start to recruit guys because it was still in the season. And Todd Golden, I had a conversation with him in Nashville, and he explicitly told me, we are not focusing on the portal while we're still playing. So my current expectation is that Florida is probably meeting as we are and having a conversation about who it is that they want to pursue and starting to set up those visits. But I can tell you that any contact prior to Florida's elimination from the NCAA tournament was very preliminary. Just let's get our, you know, name in the hat at that point. It wasn't let's pursue this guy. They haven't made any decisions. And so I think we start to see that pick up now. But I would, you know, take every listed contact that you see publicly at this time with a grain of salt, just because, I can tell you with certainty that Florida was slowing down its process so that it could focus on the team that it had, not on next year's group. Hmm.
Good stuff. Good stuff. Any more basketball questions, guys, before we get into football here?
No, I'm good. I'm good.
All right, cool. So football back after a spring break hiatus. Spring practice on, yes, Saturday?
Saturday.
Saturday. And then again today, I presume?
Tuesday.
Tomorrow. Tuesday.
Dan,
okay.
Come on, Dan. Tuesday.
I don't know if it's, I'm not invited to the practices like you guys are.
Get together, bro.
Yeah, Jacob, give me your
unpaid intern, Dan. We can get him on the field.
I don't know. After the last couple of months, I don't know if the invite is still extended. All right. So give us your thoughts, Jacob, some players that you're looking out for, and then we'll let you run after that, or some things that you've seen on the field, some things that you've heard. Just give the guys some good news or any news.
Yeah. You know, I still think that it's one of those things where it is the springtime and everything is happy and great. In the spring, and it's easy to get kind of carried away with that. I'm sure Nick has said that a million times on the podcast.
Nick never gets carried away, actually.
Positive vibes. Always has been.
Yeah, but I would say, you know, I think that there is a different vibe at practices, and I will agree with Billy Napier here. Florida's new coaches have kind of set a different tone than what we saw in previous practice sessions, whether that's Gerald Chapman, who you can hear from outside the complex yelling at his players because he's just so, you know, passionate and motivated to get these guys to play to his image for the group. Or Will Harris, who we walk in at a gate that is right in front of where the secondary does its individual skill development period. And we walk in and almost every single day we see Will Harris holding a pad and getting tackled by his players to help them work on tackling technique. Those were not things that existed previously with this team. And so I do think that there's kind of a different energy around practice, and having had some conversations with players, you know, Nick has been there for this too. I think that we could agree that there's kind of a different sense of motivation, whether that's born from we've lost and had losing records in the last 2 years and now we need to show some progress, or if that's because this is just a group that has that extra push from its new coaching staff to be in a position to have that, you know, extra want to in order to really take a step forward as a program. That being said, it's still a little early to have standouts. Remember, Florida had two essentially non-contact practices before spring break, and now we're just getting into the full contact, you know, full swing of spring practices. But there are some guys standing out. I would say that Aaron Gates is somebody who has really stood out to me. He's looked super athletic and like somebody who I think could contribute as a second-year player after last year kind of dealing with some injuries. Jakeem Jackson is another cornerback, you know, star slot corner hybrid type player who's had a really nice looking spring so far, at least. The entire secondary really has been impressive. And Billy Napier was willing to say that publicly, that he thought that unit took a step forward. And so I would say that that's possible so far, but I also don't want to get ahead of myself. And I'll say this, you know, I think that there's a lot more that we need to see. I think that Florida would tell us, and Billy Napier sort of did, that they still need to progress quite a bit with their offensive skill players. They're going to need more out of that wide receiver room. They're happy with what they got out of a guy in Shamir Adike, who's looked good in practices and is familiar with Graham Mertz, but it's new. And even Napier said that is a group that will have to make some progress. I'm interested to see how the interior of Florida's offensive line shakes out. I think that they made upgrades at the tackle positions with Brandon Crenshaw-Dixon Devin Manuel, and then the return of Austin Barber and Cam Waits were kind of banged up. But the interior of the line is still interesting to me. At the moment, it looks like Najee Harris is going to take on that left guard role. Jake Slaughter is back to play center. And then Damian George moved from the outside to go play right guard. So how that group, that trio on the inside ends up panning out, are they able to protect Graham Mertz more than they did a year ago and enable some more explosive offense will be what I continue to look for. And have we seen it yet? It's too early to say. But I do think that, you know, the energy is different and better around Florida football right now.
There's definitely something to be said for, like, Graham Mertz banging on the table for DK, the relationship they have. Like, you can look at the numbers last year, and it's not awe-inspiring from DK, but go back 2 years ago, I think he had 60-something receptions when Graham Mertz was throwing those passes. You're trying to find a replacement for Ricky Pearsall. There is not a one-to-one replacement, but you've got to get some attention away from Trey Wilson, because if you don't have anything proven, as good as Trey Wilson is, defensive coordinators will figure a way to scheme him out of games and force Florida to go somewhere else. So you're going to have to find options. But the spring portal will be open again, and we'll see if Florida looks to add anything else. But I think DK has looked good. Khalil Jackson will get more opportunities, and there's certainly plenty of opportunities for guys. Unfortunate for me, big Andy Jean guy, South Florida guy. He's been dealing with hamstring issues and has been in a black jersey for most of spring. But Aiden Mizell, Andy Jean, and then the two freshmen. We still got to find out, Jacob, how a man the stature of Tank Hawkins gets the nickname Tank. We need to do some Big J journalism. Yeah, to find out how someone 5'10", 165 earns the nickname Tank.
No Limit Soldier.
I don't know. Max. Well, that and also the Tank, you got to give Tanks the credit that they deserve. Those things are that they can move and he can move.
Yes.
So yeah. I don't know that it's a totally misfit nickname.
I think what scares me, last year we said the defensive line was strong in spring and then also strong in fall camp, but then we realized that our offensive line was poo. So, like, with the offense and Billy saying the receivers are going to have to step up, but let's also saying the DBs have looked a lot better, just, you know, gives me some caution a little bit. I do want to see us grab an outside receiver in the portal somewhere. Hopefully one of these guys like Andy Jean pick it up and, you know, get out of the injury circle. But right now, that's my cause for concern right now. It's an outside receiver. I think Trey Wilson could play inside. I like DK to play inside of the slot as well. But right now, who's the outside threat? I know Khalil Jackson has shown some promise out there, but I think we need a true number one on the outside to take some things up top to go deep.
I don't think it's crazy to say at this point, even though we're, what is it, Nick, five practices into spring ball now?
Yeah.
I don't think that it's crazy to say that that's going to be a priority for Florida in the spring window, or at least it has to be. I think Florida will have to go out and see at a minimum what's available at the receiver position, because it's not a terribly deep group with proven talent. And there are guys who are really good, or at least from a raw perspective, in this unit. You know, Tank is somebody who I think is really talented and could be a difference, is that, you know, speedy gadget guy that we kind of saw Eugene Wilson do last year, as Wilson graduates to a more prominent, just regular go-to receiver type role. But they will need to go and find somebody, I think, in the portal to be able to bolster that unit with A, talent, which matters, of course, but also experience. This is a young group outside of DK, and I think that they would benefit from somebody who is proven in terms of their production, but also proven in terms of, you know, leadership and experience, who could go in and elevate the unit from that aspect as well.
And it could be tight ends as well. Like Keon Zipperer, I mean, he had knee surgery over a year ago now. Still in the black jersey, not participating. Does he get back? What will he be? Will he stay at Florida for his last year of eligibility? Arliss Boardingham has to get better as a blocker. I think he needs to continue to evolve as an all-around player, but it doesn't have to be a necessarily, you know, a Biletnikoff wide receiver. There are other options. I like Florida's running back room to take some pressure off. and you need a tight end to step up. I think I've said before, and people got mad that Hayden Hansen is Jonathan Odom with healthy knees. But like, you could go into the portal and get more talent at tight end, or a pass catcher at tight end.
Yeah, with the current setup, you are essentially betting that Hayden Hansen is going to take a massive step forward as a pass blocker and you know, run blocker. You're taking a reasonably sized bet that Arliss Boardingham is going to take a step in the right direction, as you just mentioned. I think that that group has what it needs from a receiving standpoint. I think Boardingham gives Florida something that it probably hasn't had in some years now at the tight end position, just as somebody who can line up in that Y position outside and go catch a pass. But they don't have the protection that they probably need from that group yet, at least not in a proven way at all. And so, you know, receiver, tight end are probably the priority offensive positions for the spring portal period. And I will also add, and, you know, I'm sure you guys will agree, the spring portal period is no sure thing. It's not like the winter. The winter is an opportunity to go get proven dudes who are going to make a difference on your roster. And at least historically, we have not seen the spring window produce that same kind of talent. Ricky Pearsall is a spring transfer guy. He participated in spring practices with Arizona State and then jumped into the portal. Do I think that that is going to be the exception or the rule? Probably more the exception for that portal period. I think guys who are jumping in that late are either in a hairy coaching situation, which is exactly what Pearsall was in. That was the end of the Herm Edwards experiment at Arizona State. Is there a Herm Edwards, though, that's going to really motivate a lot of these guys to enter the portal? No, it kind of seems like a one-off type of situation. So I'll be interested to see the exact level of talent that enters the portal in addition to who Florida chooses to pursue based on its needs and what it's able to get out of that.
And you can't there is no SEC to SEC transfer, so you're looking outside of the conference in that spring portal period. We know how much this coaching staff values their evaluations, which might not lend itself to a 15-day window. Which, listen, the 15-day window is just to enter your name, but things do tend to move more expeditiously in the spring than they do in the fall window, their winter window.
They seem to move like the NFL free agency, where there's no contact period, then all of a sudden you have a four-year $50 million deal signed.
Dan, I know you're not suggesting that there's tampering in college football. I know that's not something you would slander.
I wish we would tamper more
football with.
You know? I wish we would tamper more. We seem to have some people that have struggled with communication. Jacob, want to get your thoughts. I know you mentioned Aaron Gates. Of the players that maybe we haven't seen much of, is Aaron Gates probably the guy that you're most excited about? I know Nick said he's also potentially on punt and kick return, but who are some other names that you're, I know you've mentioned a few, right? But who are some other names that, that maybe people have forgotten about or, you know, redshirted last year that you're excited about?
Yeah. I don't know that it's a name that people have forgotten about necessarily because it was a pretty high profile moment in the offseason, but just with the injuries that are occurring at Florida's linebacker position, I'm personally excited to see what Grayson Pup Howard is going to be able to do throughout the rest of the spring and, you know, into the summer. Shamar James is limited. Derek Wingo is limited. Miles Graham is out for the remainder of the spring after undergoing back surgery. So Grayson Howard, who I already thought was going to be in a position to play a pretty prominent role, if not start, is now one of just a couple guys who are even healthy. So he will have to step up. And I do think that Florida was already prepared to lean on him. So it, I don't know that it, you know, fulfills the under the radar category, but certainly somebody who is very important to this team at this point. I'm trying to think, you know, under the radar. You know, I'll say this. Triquez Bridges, Florida's transfer from Oregon, is going to be in a position, I think, to step in with the first team defense at safety. Didn't play a whole lot even last year at Oregon. So if you're going to go back and watch his film, I think he had like 16 tackles in his final season with the Ducks. And this year is going to be put in a position where I would imagine he is going to play a very high usage role, whether that's as a starter or as a very top reserve defensive back who kind of splits some time between star and safety, both of which I think he's capable of playing. We still need to have more time to really see what he's going to look like. But I do think that he's starting to impress and is part of the reason why Billy Napier singled out the secondary as a unit that's taken a step forward. So I would say him. And then on the offensive side, you know, I'll actually give the nod to Nick's guy here. I'll say that the Hayden Hansen Arliss Boardingham duo has moved in the right direction. I think that Boardingham has clearly focused on his blocking over the offseason. He seems to still be a focus. He told us when we interviewed him just a couple weeks ago that that is something that he knows he'll have to be better at in order to elevate his game in his second season as a full-time player. And Hayden Hansen as well. Hayden Hansen was a solid but not very good blocker last year. He was not a very serviceable pass catcher. And Florida will look to kind of elevate him in both of those regards this year, because I think that he'll be somebody who's relied upon pretty heavily, especially as we don't really know what to expect from Keon Zipper or whether or not Florida's going to go into the portal and go get somebody. So those are my under the radar and or really need to step up lists through five practices.
I got one question for you. Interested in the running back room? Free Trevor Etienne, even though he was free after like 45 minutes after a DUI, but free that man. But the backup running backs, everybody behind Montrell Johnson, how are they looking? Jaden Ball looks like a grown ass man, 6 foot, 230 plus. He looks like he's ready to perform year one. Treyon Webb showed some promise last year. What's the room looking like behind Treyon Webb?
Well, I would say that they have multiple grown ass men freshmen in that room. Jaden Baugh looks like somebody who could be a contributor right away, and Kanan Daniels looks equally ready to contribute. Those are two massive-bodied, true freshman running backs who I think are going to be capable of making an impact. You mentioned Treyon Webb. I was really impressed with Treyon Webb last year, and there just wasn't really room for him to get his shine. Obviously, Trevor Etienne and Montrell Johnson were going to dominate the rep share, but if you look through the stats, Treyon Webb paced them in yards per carry last season. He paced the whole team. And so I'll be interested to see what he looks like in an expanded capacity. My biggest concern, though, for that room, which I do think is one of the more solid ones on Florida's team overall, is who is going to step up as a pass catcher and who is going to step up as a pass protector. Last year, we saw Trevor Etienne struggle quite a bit as a pass protector. Montrell Johnson was somebody who was solid in that capacity. They will need to take a step forward, I think, to really complete Florida's offense, especially as it pursues this step forward as a deep shot-taking team that's able to pass down the field. You got to be able to protect in order to be able to do that, and the running back room is a part of that picture. And then as pass catching goes, you know, I don't think that we've seen Florida utilize, at least as effectively as it could, its running backs, hands in the passing game. And Jaden Baugh is somebody who I'll be looking at as a candidate to really step into that role. He has receiver experience. He's got good hands. He's quick twitch. And I do think that Florida will look to kind of expand his role as somebody who can go and catch a pass out of the backfield. We saw them have to do it last year with Eugene Wilson. Yeah, I'm sure you guys remember Florida often. We saw them slot Eugene Wilson in the running back alignment just to kind of get a matchup, whether it was with a linebacker or a slot corner who had to make an adjustment and go cover the backfield. And it worked really well when they did go to that. I think that in a perfect world, though, Florida's able to accomplish that by using a running back in that role. And Jaden Baugh is somebody who I think can probably do that right away. And maybe even Treyon Webb a little bit. I think we've seen some athleticism from Webb that would suggest that, you know, perhaps he could be a good route runner and somebody that Florida can rely on in its passing game. But overall, definitely encouraged by that unit. And, you know, I've been telling people for a couple of weeks now, if there's one position group that you can easily mitigate a big loss like that of Trevor Etienne, it's probably at running back. Where you can recruit, you know, good players reasonably easily, and Florida's certainly done that. So they have a stable of good backs for sure.
Okay. Yeah, those two, the two freshmen, KD, Kanan Daniels, and Jaden Baugh, don't look like freshmen. Boys showed up looking like grown men at the running back position. So it'll be interesting to me, Jacob. I don't think we know what will the splits be. Last year, I think it was so 50-50, and going into the season, but everyone was telling fans that, like, listen, I don't care if you think Trevor Etienne's better. It's going to be 50-50. Now, without Trevor, is it 50-50 still? Is it 60-40 Montrell and the rest of the room? Is it 70-30? I think talking to some of the coaches, they think Montrell is a guy who can get stronger throughout a game the more carries he gets. So how much of a bell cow does Montrell become, or do you still try to make it, you know, a 40-40-20 split between Montrell, Treyon, and then the two freshmen?
you know, I have to imagine that Montrell Johnson is going to get a larger rep share than he did last year. I mean, the guy returned, was draft eligible this past offseason, is somebody who I think, you know, the way I see it is this. Florida, Trevor Etienne moved on because he wasn't the starter, and Florida held on to Montrell Johnson, who effectively became the starter. And so do I think that Billy Napier is going to now split reps between Montrell Johnson, the guy who stuck with him through and through this entire process, and not elevate his rep share in favor of giving carries to guys like Treon Webb and Kanan Daniels and Jaden Baugh? I don't think so. I think we do see, you know, a slight bump in Montrell Johnson's usage, especially for the reason you said. He improves as the game goes on. But I also think that we see Florida go a lot deeper into its running back room. Last year was primarily Johnson, Etienne, a huge gap, and then Treon Webb. This year, I think we see Johnson, Webb, Daniels, and Baugh all get into the mix in some capacity, whether it's Baugh on the field if they want to throw a pass to a running back, or Johnson on the field because they're going to run the ball inside the tackles. You know, it's a situation where I think that we see a more healthy split across players, but Johnson will certainly be the headliner of that group, and it'll be clear that he's number one.
And maybe we're forgetting that too. Tawan just brought him up. Cam Carroll. Cam Carroll, I think, can catch the ball a little bit. Had a pretty devastating knee injury, so we missed him last year. He's just vibing at practice right now, continuing to go through rehab. But maybe he's a guy who, when we talked to him last year, you go back and look at the numbers, he's got some pass-catching numbers to show. But somebody who, when we talked to, said that, you know, catching balls is a priority for him and something he takes pride in. So I agree with you, though. Like, I would like to see, especially without a go-to receiver outside of Eugene Wilson, or at least a proven one, finding other ways to get running backs involved to aid the passing game. Jazz, unnecessary there.
I'll add this. You know, I think with Cam Carroll, there is a matter of kind of wait and see what the knee turns out to be like. He's not practicing right now in spring practices. We've seen him in a black jersey, but it's not even like he's not really working with his unit like some of the guys who are in non-contact do. This is a guy who's still a ways off, I think, from making a full recovery with his knee. If he gets back to a point where he can contribute, absolutely, I think we'll see him. He's a big body running back, tough runner. Like you guys said, he can catch a pass if he has to. But again, that was a really bad knee injury that he suffered last preseason camp. And I think that the road to recovery is still a long one. I don't know that he's at the end of that yet. So do I think that he can contribute? Yes. Do I think that he is somebody that we can currently, you know, insert into this rotation that we're talking about? Not confidently. So I think that's more of a wait and see. But yeah, no, it's a good point. Cam Carroll is another name who could certainly be a factor if he's healthy enough to do so.
Switching subjects real quick, because I forgot. Is Asa Turner on campus yet, or does he come after the spring?
Yeah, he's on campus practicing.
Yeah.
Much from he's him, I know he's still getting acclimated, but have we seen much from him? Or?
I am not so sure. I think that there's a chance that he could be kind of a flex player between unit one and unit two. A healthy Jordan Castell is somebody who I think will almost certainly start for Florida. And then it's kind of a battle between a couple guys. They brought in DJ Douglas from Tulane, who was really good last year and could easily be a starter. I mentioned TriQuez Bridges earlier. I think that he's somebody who absolutely could be a starter in this defense. Aaron Gates can play a little bit of safety if he has to. And then there's a battle. You got Bryce Thornton, who's coming off a solid freshman season. He's back. Asa Turner is somebody who I think could play a role. You also have to remember, Turner was not healthy throughout the entirety of last season and has had some injury history, you know, at Washington. He is fully healthy right now, but will I assume that he's the starter at this point in the game? No, not quite yet. But I do think he's a part of that conversation to occupy the second spot that isn't Jordan Castell's role.
But I mean, that's a huge part of what Florida has needed, is that depth and that ability to have somebody step in when one of the starters does go down or needs rest or you know, get banged up a little bit. So it's good to see that some of these areas of concern have been addressed. Jacob, we've kept you on for a long time, man. Really appreciate it today. Nick, Silk, any final questions before we wrap Jacob up here?
No, Jacob, before we put you in the Christmas wrapping and put a bow on you, DJ Lagway, man, how impressive has he been so far in spring?
Yeah, I mean, the talent is super apparent. I don't think anybody would try and tell you that this isn't a guy who's super impressive and super skilled. I think that it is important, though, that Florida fans tamper their expectations such that they understand that this is a true freshman playing the most difficult position to play in the most difficult conference to play it in. And so time will be required to get him to a point where he is ready to go and contribute in this offense. He is QB2. Graham Mertz is going to be the starter. And if something were to happen, Lagway is the next man up. But I think that we still need to see Lagway acclimate a little bit to the college game. And it's not a knock on him in any way at all. This is more me saying that there is a true freshman quarterback, regardless of his talent or stars or pre-college ratings, who is on campus right now, and he will be a true freshman. He needs to have the true freshman leniency and the opportunity to learn and get his feet under him. So I'm super impressed. But one of my takeaways from the first five practices is that this is a super young quarterback. This is a guy who is going to absorb a lot from the mentorship that he has with Graham Mertz. Billy Napier is extremely excited to work with a guy who is supremely talented. I think that there's few, if not none, better quarterbacks in the country at his age than DJ Lagway. But I also will say this, time will be required. And we're going to see how that shakes out. I think that we see Lagway contribute in some capacity. I would imagine that we see packages for him in games. Is that a week one thing, though? I'm not sure yet. I think that that's going to be something that we see over the course of the remainder of the spring and then even through the summer and preseason camp. But to say he's impressive would be an understatement. He is a five-star quarterback for a reason. The arm is incredible. He is an athlete who can, you know, tuck the ball and run in a way that I don't think Florida really has in Graham Mertz, which adds a dimension to this offense. And he's an impressive player without question. So I'm looking forward to seeing exactly what the first year development is and what that turns into from a usage standpoint.
All right. That arm talent is undeniable.
That release is nuts, man. Hey, Jacob, keep killing it out there, man. I always see you on the timeline, breaking news, doing your thing, man. Big fan.
I appreciate you guys. It was fun joining you.
Absolutely. Right. Well, thanks so much, Jacob. We will talk with you soon. Don't be a stranger.
See you Tuesday, Rudner.
Yes, sir. See you guys Tuesday. Appreciate you guys.
Sounds like a wild, wild west like call out there.
It'll either be a baseball or football, but we'll see each other somewhere.
Awesome. All right, guys. Well, Jacob, appreciate you.
We appreciate you, brother. Jacob Rudner, 247. One of the hardest working guys in the business,
dude. Sure. I told him he's covering basketball. I've only had to do it 1 year, but to cover basketball, especially the way he covers basketball, cover baseball and football like this time of year, it's a lot, too much. I did it 1 year, and that was enough for me.
You ain't got the sauce no more like that. You can't hang.
I'm old, man. Jacob's young. Yeah. Jacob's young, 23, young in the cut.
Yep.
I'm old, I'm washed. I got a gray beard. Got my mom car.
Your mom car? Yeah, that's car. Exactly what I was thinking it was. I often see moms driving around Teslas listening to sea shanties. All right, gentlemen. Oh. Before we head out of here, any final thoughts? We got one more quick ad read. Nick, you have song of the week, I believe.
Get on.
Yeah, I like Jacob's energy of that. The packages for Lagway year one, man. We'll see when they start, but big packages on the way.
Big packages on the way.
Yeah.
All right, let's give one final ad read to our friends over at Alumni Hall. If you are in Gainesville, go visit them on Archer Road, or if you are scouring through the World Wide Web, alumnihall.com. Go visit them. Anything that you want, Florida Gators apparel-wise, accessory-wise, gifts from baby to grandparent, anything in between, any sport that you'd want. They have baseball, they have softball, obviously football and basketball. They have some other shirts and gymnastics and a few of the other sports that are out there. Go check them out. A longtime supporter of this show and this program, alumnihall.com. No better place in Gainesville or on the internet to get Gators gear. I want to throw a quick happy birthday to Trav Everett. His birthday is on Thursday, so we appreciate his
happy birthday, bro.
Shout out to Trav. Trav, don't try to go full Dan Bender responsibly this weekend. And
you only get one chance to be great, man. Go full Daniel.
Listen,
full Daniel, man.
Go full Daniel. And enjoy the hungover lip latte Monday. We will be here for you.
8-1. April 1st, man. Subscribe. He asked when Silt would the show be back. The roll up, it will be back, man. A few announcements on April Fool's Day, new relaunch, new branding, a whole lot of things. We're gonna go on a crazy run this off season of interviews. We got about 8 of them in the tuck, got a few more planned for March. So just stay tuned, man. We appreciate all the support, but we should be relaunching that whole platform April 1st.
Perfect. Perfect. If you're watching on YouTube, hit the like button, hit the subscribe button. I appreciate everybody for hopping in the chat. It's always a great side conversation during this chat. So we appreciate you guys doing that. Nick, song of the week, buddy.
I know Future dropped new music, but the real ones know that Joyner Lucas dropped a new project. Silk, we're going. Listen to this lineup. I was just listening to this on the car. We're going, the song is called Still All Right with Joyner Lucas, Logic, and Twista back on a track.
Dude, Twista's back?
Yes.
Twista's like 65.
Don't worry about it.
He still can flow?
Yeah, what?
It's a lot of words, a lot of fast talk for an old man. I got to tap
into this. One of my favorite rap songs of all time is Twisted Heat by Twista.
Rap it for me real quick.
How's like I can't. No,
yeah,
no,
go ahead, Dan.
First off, don't want to get canceled. Second off,
Dan. One third time. Off,
this is a family show, Silk. Come on.
Yeah.
You think Ahmad's calling the shots on Song of the Week again? You know?
Oh, that was one of my favorite songs of the week.
Three words of that song before. We almost. I've already got the eyes peered at me for what
I got DMs about that. Yo, what is up with that song you guys have at the end of that? Stadium Miguel. We got a graphic quick.
Tawan, it's called Still All Right. Bro, Logic's a goat too. Logic's so good.
He's just throwing around everything.
Dude, I don't know about goat,
but he's anybody. He's like, he's good. He's goat.
Everybody,
Nick, you get a goat. That's fine.
No, you're right. You're right.
That's
you're
a
right,
nasty right. goat. That's a nasty
you're
goat.
You're right. You're right. You're right. You're right. You're right. I went a little crazy. Mean,
Nick,
I went.
Don't let us rain on your parade a little bit. Just let us know when your parade's happening so we don't show up.
I went. Apparently, my parade is for every day for everyone because goats get parades. So
Logic the Goat is definitely the name of the show.
Bro, Logic's a great rapper. Great rapper. Great rapper. Great lyricist. Not the goat. Eminem's the GOAT. So
my GOAT is, you know, in that capacity, since we're going Caucasian rapper, Mac Miller, man. One time for Macadelic. Mm. That's my guy. Big Mac fan.
Mac's not Eminem. Mac was also very
Mac's
good
cooler though. Than Eminem. That's why.
His initials are Eminem.
That's true too.
Look at Dan. True. Dan, your alphabet's so good.
I can't listen to a guy that says Logic is the goat. Try to criticize.
No, that was out of pocket. That was out of pocket. That was wrong. I retract.
Yeah, screen grab that. We got to put that on the timeline.
How dare you?
I'm gonna put that. That was AI. On TikTok. It was AI. I'm putting that just on TikTok. Just for the response.
It was AI.
Yeah, Logic that might be like, viral. Yeah, I got one guy that thinks I'm the goat.
All right, same part of same time next week. We will see you guys. More football, more basketball. See you guys. Thanks for joining.
To tell me what do you see when you look in my eyes. Got a lot on my mind, hoping I never be going out of my mind. Been trying to mature without growing out of my prime. I thought I was ready, it really wasn't my time. I know, I live in my head. I said I'd be rich and I did what I did. But I don't do this shit for me, I do this shit for my kids. I teach them how to go and get it when they're ready to leave. But tired of living up in hell when I know heaven is free. And nothing really more important than protecting any peace. I wanna teach them how to grow up and be better than me. When I was chasing all the paper with no second to breathe. But I tell myself don't ever give up and accept the defeat. And my premonition's already written indefinitely. But I never listen, I know my vision they never could see. And truthfully, I wasn't even supposed to make it this far. I take it this far. Out of the guy got me, I'm thanking him for it. As soon as I get it, then I be paying him for it. You know you made it when all the haters support. The haters support. Jonah been working and I ain't taking no shorts. When they tell me be humble, then I'ma take it too far. Shit, I used to feel like Will, now I'm feeling like, made mistakes, can't get it right, yeah. Niggas can't stand me, I'm living like, trying to win a Grammy like Killamite, I'm on the dog like Killamite, yeah. Took a lot of L's, trying to win a fight, got back up, I'm still alright, yeah. I be alright, I'm still alright. And I don't really care about nothing except for keeping my legacy. Hoping I be living long enough to see what the end of me. Gotta take a shot for every nigga trying to get rid of me. I wish they could look inside my soul and see what they did to me. I got a fire inside me and a secret within me. When I look inside the mirror, all I see is a little me. Wishing I could break up, but I hope that even no hindering me. If I overcome it, then I'll be achieving the victory, yeah. What you really want, what it really is. I remember living my life with a milli fears. Over the years, I thought I had a million ideas on how to find peace and release nonsense. I do it for the art, not the content. All I really wanted was acceptance. Now as a man, I can vent this. Fuck that endless. Do what you love in this life. Don't let hate in your life. No, don't work for a job till you ate it. And look back like, goddamn, I really done gave him my life. If I say just one life with this verse and it's worth it. If this is your future, you need to reverse it. Ain't nobody perfect, man, fuck all that cake. It ain't worth it, just take what you buried deep down in the earth. That I know that you heard it, a voice from within, not above. So do what you love. Ain't no way I could keep it up. Feeling is creeping up. Telling me I would not be enough. No, wasn't being me enough. I think I see enough of what I don't want in my life. Give a damn if it's right, that's the reason I write. Need a reason to fight, cause I need it in sight. With these monsters in sight, it get darker than what I would like. But I know I'm alright.
Ain't no way
I'm
that you could ever know my struggle. As a child going through shit way harder than blowing out a bubble. I would know a lot of trouble before I got to the lyrical ability of water that was flowing out of funnel. Like a channel, the aggression and depression for only a moment. When I had to realize rapping ain't it. When there wasn't no more money from a record deal, I couldn't get another one, so I was about to quit. Had to get a job. Didn't wanna be a slob, even though I would rather be spitting bars. Then one day somebody saw me at work and said, Twister, why are you in here washing cars? That hurt my heart. That shit told me apart. So I prayed up to God that if I ever got another chance at music, I won't take it for granted. I'ma dunk if I get the law. Ran into AK from Do or Die. He said, come to the studio, I'ma put you on a song. Start my new gig in the morning, but I'ma come after. This is my chance to get back on. Thankful that I was living at my brother's house, but I want my own, so I'm finna go in. I walked in the lab and the beat was by Tracks. The title of the song was Popin. I said, ooh, snap. I told him I'm about to jack. Spit it funky like I'm a Mac. I'ma come off so hard on this track, it's gon' change my condition and change the way people rap. Might be broke as shit, and they collecting no dope from tips, but I be spitting more game than a mouthful of poker chips. And I was glad that the world recognized how dope this is, and the prayer was effective. If you stressed and depressed, then let this comment soak in your brain. First time that I ever played Popin for somebody, I was on the way to work on the train. And I didn't quit it until the record was dropping. But when I did it, I knew it was right. Cause through my prayers and my faith and my works, it gets darker than what I would like, but I know I'm alright. Alright, alright, alright.
Shapes that swing.
By the time you get this video, it might be too late.
Now people are gathering at Blue Slide Park.